What is metamodern spirituality?
I guess to unpack that, I would break that up according to the two terms, metamodern and spirituality. Starting with metamodern, that refers to a category of thinking and cultural discourse that comes after postmodernism. And for me, I take that rather broadly. There's a number of different metamodern strands of that discourse, and I've tried to summarize and synthesize those in my book called Metamodernism or The Cultural Logic of Cultural Logics. So I'm aware that there's some diversity in that term itself, but I think of it broadly as a way to move beyond postmodernism by means of postmodernism. And for the way I think about it, it has a strong dialectical sort of method to it in terms of reflecting on prior cultural epochs and paradigms, objectifying them, critiquing them, and transcending them, and the subsequent ability to toggle in and out of these different modes of thinking. But different people have different conceptions of that. Go on.
But you're basically pointing to the fact that in a metamodern context or from a metamodern perspective, you're able to see the constructs of prior worldviews, prior cultures, and be able to inhabit them
Yes, that, yeah.
and move between them.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of talking about it, of appreciating what comes with different degrees of reflection and self-reflexivity and being consciously aware of those to the point where one can intentionally inhabit those different modes. That would be a kind of broadly general a take to the idea. But at the same time, that does allow a kind of progression to take place so that we're not just changing, we're moving forward, and we can keep track of how we're moving forward by the degree to which we're able to reflect on what's come before and be able to toggle relative to those different modes of thought.
Okay, great. And spirituality then.
Yeah, spirituality is also a rather broad term. And I, let's see how I would define that. I tend to use the word spirituality as opposed to religion, largely for connotative reasons and some of the baggage that's associated with these terms. But at the same time, I'm not myself entirely uncomfortable with a word like religion. I would say generally, spirituality to me gets at ways of connecting ourselves to the rest of the cosmos in a way that we feel homed in it, and that provides us a sense of meaning, orientation, normative value. And the word spirituality for me tends to suggest that from a particularly kind of non-dogmatic sort of mode. In culture, the word spirituality is often contrasted with religion to emphasize more of the personal, and individual aspects of meaning making. Though I'm also fond of Layman Pascal's distinction that he makes between spirituality and religion, as spirituality being the integrative aspects that the individual does to bring together and harmonize their different subsystems, and to see religion as the sort of sociological analog of that, that's what religion does collectively when it's really working well, is harmonizing the various subsystems at a collective level. And so I think spirituality and religion are very comparable in that sense, but I tend to lean on the language of spirituality because I think that's a lot more of a accessible place for people to enter into notions of meaning making and sort of holistic sense making, in a kind of symbolic and comprehensive sense.
Great. And from your distinction, there's also seems to be a distinction between something that is more individually oriented and something that is collective, which is kind of implicit in what Layman Pascal is saying, and institutionalized, that there's a difference between the practices or the spirituality that I might practice or engage with, and religious practice, which is usually done in community.
Yeah, and I think this point could be dug into a little bit and sort of more fully parsed and analyzed in a meaningful way, but we don't have to get into that. I just want to note that institutionalization can be a good or a bad thing. It will often land for folks as a bad thing, as a negative thing, something that tends towards ossification and dogmatism. And certainly that's true to some extent, but also to the degree that wisdom is transmitted intergenerationally successfully, we need institutions to be part of that. And so there is a
Absolutely.
version of sort of salutary, healthful, necessary religion and institutionalization of spirituality. And in many ways, my work is trying to help facilitate that process for post-postmodern forms of spirituality.
Great. And how do you, emergentism is what you are naming a particularly metamodern spiritual slash religious approach.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Emergentism, as a religion of complexity for the metamodern world, in which I was trying to present a sort of comprehensive vision for how I see one form of metamodern religion taking shape. And it's done in the metamodern style, which is inherently sort of sincerely ironic. So there's something obviously profoundly pretentious about the notion of articulating a religious vision for the world.
It
And I
used to be
tried to.
called a Bible or the Quran.
What's that?
It used to be called the Bible or the Quran.
Sure. I mean, at the same time, going back to the idea of the metamodern ability to toggle and see the different ways of meaning making, more traditional forms of approaching religion were, I would say, arguably fully earnest and lacked a kind of ironic self-awareness about the grandiosity of their scope and plans. And that often tended to lead towards those pathological effects of kind of the grand narratives taking over everything, imperializing everything, and leading to various forms of subjugation and marginalization. Some of the things that we're now trying to move beyond, critique, objectify, and transcend. And so, trying to do religion today, to me, seems to necessarily be about maintaining an awareness, a kind of self-awareness or reflective awareness about failed strategies of the past, including various kinds of grand narratives that go into modernity and which postmodernism critiques. So, a metamodern approach to religion needs to be able to cognize the potential failure modes of religion and sort of fold them into its approach to that issue. And so I think something like sincere irony helps us be able to do that by giving us enough sort of ironic distance and self-awareness relative to the project, but also maintaining enough of that sincerity and earnestness to acknowledge that these things are necessary and important, and that we're all essentially called to do our best with all the limitations and constraints that we face to make the world better. And I think that to the degree religion is about a symphonic, holistic harmonization of society's parts into an emergent whole, that is necessary, and it is work that needs to be done, but it has to be done thoughtfully, reflectively, and self-aware to its own, again, potential failure modes. So I was trying to do some of that in that book.
Great. So you just articulated what one could perceive as a practice
Yes.
of contemplation, engagement, that because I guess I mean part of what we're looking at and for is so in the times that we're in now. Which is a kind of, to be technical, a mess. How do we, what kind of transformation through practice is needed in order to be able to inhabit or to contribute to making things better, as you were saying?
Well, I think you're right to point out that this sort of project is itself a religious practice. That's how I see it anyway. And I talk about the need for metamodern mythopoeia or myth making, which has always been key, a central component of my work. And I think that that springs from a recognition that in our current moment of crisis, we have seen the breakdown of historical sense-making structures, religious structures, and grand narratives in a way that I think compels us to rethink how we might fulfill those functions today, but in a way that won't be subject to the same critiques that caused them to be deconstructed in the first place. So that's another way of just saying that I think of metamodern spirituality and metamodern mythopoeia specifically as being a sort of reconstructive endeavor. It's a process, it's a spiritual endeavor, a spiritual activity that is a sort of vocational invitation to engage a articulation of how the world might be conceived. Now, I'm going to stop there. Let me try that again. How would I express this? I see metamodern mythopoeia as being a spiritual practice that invites us to reconceive of grand narratives and holistic meaning making from a self-aware stance, but also deeply earnest and sincere by trying to creatively generate new symbolic forms and mythic images that we can use in a religious register and in genuine sort of reverence of the beauty and profundity of reality, while also maintaining a certain kind of reflective distance from them because they are constructed artifacts of our own creative imagination. And so that's in some senses how I'm imagining metamodern mythopoeia, but it is part of a broader way of thinking about this particular moment as an evolutionary moment in history in which the divine and notions of the sacred are themselves undergoing a reconstruction. And I think when people recognize that this reconstructive effort has always been underway in history, but now it's happening at a moment when we are self-consciously aware of it, then I think people can see there's a kind of invitation to get involved in that process and participate in it consciously and attempt to, in a sense, be the artists and the poets of God going into this new epoch. And viewed from that lens, it's not just a matter of art or imagination. It's actually a rather almost prophetic calling to reimagine religion for the future.
Great. You said it was vocational, meaning it's a calling. And what is the nature of that call?
Well, I think that that requires, like all kind of religious vocations, a commitment to something higher than yourself. But to the degree that this is for a novel moment, it also requires moving out ahead of what has been into this unknown that we are facing and trying to render some of that chaos into a complexity that is comprehensible and can help organize our meaning making going into the future. So, what I think of that as is a call to participate in reimagining God, the sacred, religion, religious practice, in a way that deepens our relationship with reality. One of the ways of understanding the various deconstructions that have occurred historically for religion is to see them as moments of critique at points along which the or points along this spectrum where meaning systems have broken down, maybe under their own weight, and have needed to be reconfigured in light of new understandings of reality, in light of new evidence. And I would argue that this has had the effect of continually deepening our relationship with reality, of bringing us into more of an optimal grip with reality, to use John Vervaeke's term. And so I see this vocation, this calling to reimagine religion for the 21st century, at least, if not beyond, is to actively commit ourselves to deep contemplative practice, to deep learning practice, and to deep transformational practice, so that we can have a more empirically grounded and theoretically robust understanding of reality itself as the basis for our religious engagement in the world and with each other. So that would be how I would understand the vocational call. It's to the world, it's to humanity, and it's to the aspects of existence that also transcend our current understanding, which you can call the mystery, perhaps with a capital M, but there's something beyond us, you could say, that we are moving into and trying our best to organize into a coherent framework for optimal living and human flourishing and multi-species flourishing going forward. And I see that as a divine calling, to the degree that as we move into that mystery further, and as we open up and transform and transcend in a greater sense, that inevitably calls us to a more transcendent and encompassing and holistic approach to our lives and to those around us. So I think that is a big part of the way that I conceive of the divine and the sacred. And so conceived, I think you can look at the whole history of religious constructions, deconstructions, and reconstructions as a form of a learning process that moves us greater in that direction.
Great, thank you. I want to go pick back and pick up this very, very, very metamodern sincerity with irony. I want to make a point about that and to lead into another question. So, it with perhaps a more postmodern slant, one can take on sincere irony as a kind of cool attitude. That's probably lighter on sincerity than it is on irony. But the sincerity and irony that you're speaking about, I think that you're pointing to, is one that emerges from a deep, I'm going to use the word faith in life, or a deep love of life, which is where the sincerity comes from, and a humility, which is where the irony comes from. And what practices does one engage with? You said you spoke about contemplation and so forth, but how are there specific practices that you feel are helpful in creating or creating that fertile ground in one's soul to be able to be both a lover of life and deeply humble about the human nature and some of its not so nice characteristics?
Yeah, I think for me, if I were to sum up my approach to all of this in terms of practices, I would return to the idea of learning. When I talk about contemplation, I do think of it as a sort of reflection on reality that leads to increasing levels of comprehensiveness and integration that lead to greater insight. But when I talk about the sincerity and the irony of a metamodern sensibility, I think that that is also born out of the learning process. And simply put, and as we were kind of gesturing at earlier, I think that that ironic sincerity emerges naturally once one has undergone a kind of disenchantment or disillusionment through a deconstructive process. Because when one looks at meaning in a sort of fully naive and earnest way, I think that is the that's what opens one up to the failure modes that we were discussing, and that those necessarily need to be critiqued and seen for their limitations, in large part because of the ways that they lead to negative outcomes and suffering of people. If you want to go back to more traditional modes of thinking and use that as an example, there are all sorts of ways that grand narratives and grand sacred histories and grand theological visions have the capacity to harm people and to limit their interaction with other groups of people, to see mutual understanding across groups, to limit people's notions of themselves relative to dogmatic ideas of sin and maybe total depravity, various theological visions of that nature that might give people meaning, but that might actually constrain them or keep their horizon of their worldview limited. And I think that the learning process is precisely what causes those worldviews to bump up against their limitations and break down under their own weight. And when that happens, they deconstruct. And out of that deconstruction comes that heightened self-awareness from a new stance, a new position that can look back on where one had been when they were embedded in that worldview and now take it as an object of critique. And so that's where that ironic distance comes from. It comes from that deconstruction, that disillusionment, the disenchantment. And I think that that's necessary. At the same time, it's incomplete. And I think what we're then called to do is reconstruct out of the rubble of our disenchantment some more holistic, more complete way of seeing things that can take stock of the failures of our previous way of seeing and try to transcend them from our new position of ironic distance. And I think that that inevitably leads to what we're talking about, at least from this metamodern stance of an ironic sincerity that can see the failure modes of the past and yet can also see that earnest endeavor towards meaning and understanding and connection and totality also are of value. And so if we can reconfigure our approach to those things in light of their failures to try to get beyond their failures, then I think we're inevitably confronted with a kind of irony that can also balance a necessary sincerity. And this is part of this dialectical process of learning. So for me, I conceive of spiritual practice very much in terms of learning, even though that often means that what we had been engaging in as a spiritual practice might be subject to deconstruction down the road. And so I would say that ultimately, yeah, that's how I would try to account for ironic sincerity as not just a kind of postmodern coolness that tries to get outside of ideology and have some kind of apathetic, relativistic, cool stance on everything, but instead, it's the irony that comes from the recognition of the failure and the incompleteness and the partiality of all holistic modes of meaning making, coupled with the sincerity of trying to do them anyway, in some new form, in some new register, in spite of the inevitable failure. And I think that this is a way of understanding metamodernism that cuts across the different strands of that discourse. You see it in the cultural studies work, you see it in the developmental modes, you see it in the philosophy of Storm and others. And this is, I think, a quintessentially metamodern sensibility arising out of the kind of historical necessities of our moment, grappling with postmodern awareness, but also grappling with the eternal necessary human endeavor to make meaning and understanding and value at the core, at the center of their lives. So that's how I would try to account for all
All right.
that.
Okay. Woo. Great. How so what practices are useful in this, and is there's a way in which we're speaking of what we've talked a little bit about individual and collective. But maybe let's start with what practices are helpful in bringing this about. And
Sure.
because we're ultimately talking about what is the transformation that we're looking for, that will lead us into this unknown unfolding. And in some ways, it's how do we become, there's the thinking through and deconstructing the foundations of prior worldviews, whatever. But there's also the how do I become available to this emergence that is trying to happen? There are a couple things there.
So I do talk a little bit about this in my emergentism book in the praxis section, because once you see learning in some senses as the heart of all of these transformational practices, you can see them, you can see how that occurs at all levels of your own complexity stack. I'm a person, which means that I am, in a sense, made up of the material, the biological, the neuronal and the symbolic aspects of complexity that have been emerging over cosmic evolution. And there are ways in which all those aspects of my person are engaged in a kind of learning process, you could say. And I talk a little bit about that. And if people are interested about that framing of all this, they can check that out. But when conceived as a learning process, there's then a couple ways you could think about this, ranging from the more simple and the less complex, all the way up to the more complex and the more profound. At the more kind of mundane level, this relates to all forms of learning and greater sense making that we're capable of. And particularly as humans, with our ability to process meaningful information, the level of symbols. This includes reading. It includes all the forms of gaining a better sense of the reality that we're a part of and what makes us up. And so there is that sense of learning that is actually directly related to all this, and I don't think is properly recognized as a spiritual practice as such in the way that it deserves to be. It tends to be seen as relevant and important in more philosophical approaches to wisdom and meaning in that sense, but I think in spiritual circles tends to be undervalued. So I want to make a case for that.
That's
But there are
cool.
other practices here that I think are also crucially important. At the individual level, meditation is a big role, as a big part of this, in the sense of trying to gain deeper awareness of who the perceiving individual is, and trying to step back from the different constructions that have gone into that process that might have falsely led us to align our sense of identity with something that maybe we're not. So, a deepening meditation practice, I think, is a really crucial complement to a contemplative practice, and it's one that's been important for me. At the more collective level, I think that ritual construction and what I kind of call metamodern alchemy is also a really important part of this. And here we do this at Sky Meadow for our metamodern spirituality labs that we do, where people come together, and as part of our gatherings, we will construct a ritual together, a kind of opening ceremony of some sort that emerges collectively out of the group. And one of the things that we're trying to do is explore and experiment with new forms of collective metamodern religiosity. And in a sense that where something does not yet exist, we are trying to bring something into being in an open and exploratory way. So it's by
And
nature,
is the ritual important in relation to the mythopoetic that you mentioned? It's like the hands-on part of that.
Exactly. It's a way in which people can help contribute and participate in this emergent unfolding that we were talking about. And it gets at that kind of humility that you also named, which is an important component of this, because no one is stepping up saying, here's the ritual. Now I bestow to you the new way of seeing the ultimate truth. It is instead an open-ended and experimental process in which people come together and try to collectively co-create something that will bring forth a kind of collective surplus cohesion out of the group. And so inherently gesture towards or call forth a kind of transcendence that isn't just sort of the production of a single person, but is a collectively instantiated phenomenon. And that I think is really important. And approaching these things experimentally and in that open way, I think is really important to, again, maintain that level of ironic awareness, but also to do so earnestly for the sake of transcendence. And related to that is maybe a little bit more individualistic, but I think equally as important, which is the alchemical aspect of this, which is in lieu of the fact, or I should say, in light of the fact that the historical symbols and images from the legacy religions are, if not in need of some new reinterpretation, then maybe outright lacking efficacy for our current moment. We need people to engage in the creative act of summoning and engendering and generally just bringing forth new images, symbols, frameworks, ways of interacting with the sacred and helping to mediate into intimations of transcendence for the collective. And so this is a big part of my work, which I've written about in books like Building the Cathedral and other places. But I see this as being another vital aspect of sort of a metamodern religiosity of people individually taking up the call to reimagine religion for our period with creative and novel symbols that people can use to help speak to the reality such as we find it in 2024 and not necessarily 2024 BC, for example. So those are just a number of ways that I think this kind of starts to form into a gestalt when you have people engaging in learning at all levels by learning more about their reality, by reading voraciously and trying to understand the science and the sociology and the psychology of our experience better, but also having phenomenological insight via meditation, trying to build up meta-theoretical models through contemplation and that sort of insight, and then coming together into collective groups to try to instantiate these things and embody them in real life, in real time, and give them sort of enfleshed form and a kind of creative colorized version through art and through symbol and through performance. All of that starts to cohere, I think, into a very full religious life that is a very mixed but fruitful ecology of practices that coheres people together under sort of a sacred calling. And I think has the effect of potentially being able to elicit from humanity something bigger than what we've experienced in the past, and so has the effect of sort of calling out this new realization of the transcendent or the divine or the sacred at this higher level that needs to be engaged for the requisite complexity of the world that we live in today.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
You just did your ecology of practices. There you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. There was something that you said. I think I may lose it. Something about this being bigger than what has been done before. Or what is called for is something that's bigger than has been done before. And would you say that that is related to how to put it, in a sense, the metamodern religiosity that you're pointing to is not a sect, right? It's not sectarian. It's not, it's not a way to divide from other people or life or forms of life. And it's I mean, and there's a way in which you're taking into account global realities of our plurality. And is the bigger than related to being consciously aware of all of that?
I think so. And for me, in the kind of strand of metamodernism that I'm most excited about, which is influenced by other post-postmodernisms such as the integral movement, and dialectical thought, etc., I see that as being really key to this. I think, of course, one way of understanding the postmodern insight is that pluralism. It's the realization that whatever that big story was, it can actually be relativized once you put it next to someone else's big story. And that what we are confronted with then is not one singular story that is true and all the others are false, the way that both traditionalism and modernity in some ways agreed upon, but rather that there are multiple big stories that need to be taken into account. And I think that that's where postmodernism sort of leaves us. It brings us to that insight, but then it doesn't necessarily carry us forward beyond the relativism of that insight. And so I think any genuinely successful post-postmodernism, like the developmental metamodernisms that I'm interested in, what they need to do is to bring that plurality into a higher order cohesion, what Greg Enriquez calls integrated, what does he call it? the coherent integrated pluralism. Which is that there aren't just a whole bunch of big stories and no one's to say how they might relate to each other, but that rather there are many big stories and many traditions, but there is a vantage that we can take that can situate them and coordinate them relative to each other and be able to bring them into dialogue with each other. And that if we can move into that vantage, then we wind up leaving behind a lot of the parochialism and the micro narrative fissuring and various other societal ills that are currently plaguing us in terms of identitarian politics, etc. Rather, we can situate these stories as part of a much broader narrative that might even be genuinely encompassing of all of them, something like an evolutionary heritage in which these stories have independently emerged to fulfill similar functions in different societies, but from an evolutionary vantage, might be able to be identified in terms of their structural similarities and parallels and analogs, such that we might be able to have, or at least move into, a meta-religious framing where these different religiosities are all themselves a kind of collective ecology of practices for the world. And I think that what allows us to make that move is that higher order frame that can situate and, in a sense, relativize all of these traditions to each other, but by emphasizing relationality and not relativism. And when you do that, then you can also situate all of those big stories as being part of sort of one big story, which we do all genuinely share together as a planetary species, as Homo sapiens. So
And
for those.
that one big story is more or less this progression of the divine, or of the progression of our engagement with life in more and more what conscious or conscious ways. I there's some way that you framed it before that I'm not quite repeating.
Yeah, I think that that big story is the ongoing unfolding of the sacred in the world as a developmental and participatory process that through engagement with, how would I say this? Through the collective endeavors of human beings over the course of their evolutionary history, there has been a deepening of relationship with reality and with the mystery in which we're moving into and continually rendering conscious, more explicable, more known. And as that process unfolds, does lead to a widening of scope of concern, moral regard, and a deepening of scope of emotional and psychic interiority. I think that that is a very profound vision that is not just very beautiful, but is also one that I find very compelling and convincing based on the vast empirical grounds for describing that, which various integrative approaches to the human sciences have been able to bring into relief. And yeah, I'd have more to say about that, but there's a lot to that.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm wondering if we've done it. I guess do you this is a different track tack. Do you sense that there's a cultural movement, and I was the metamodern movement, you could, but it's a certain part of the metamodern movement that is motivated by a desire to the to, desire, but not at a trivial level, a desire at the level of existential need to be able to individually and collectively tap into that which we experience and call sacred. Is
So
that
yeah.
part of what is opening in modernity now, and what practices are helpful in making that happen?
I think so, and I think actually that is a fairly general aspect of the metamodern sensibility shift. And what I mean by that is ideas like the sacred would have probably been approached in a postmodern context with an eye roll and a kind of sigh of banality, because of the inherent cynicism, skepticism, and irony that that deconstructive mode brings with it. I think that a move out of that postmodern moment and paradigm into a metamodern one has universally been occasioned by a sort of return of positivity, of hopefulness, of earnestness, of trying, of a kind of qualified optimism of some sort, and a kind of sincere engagement with things that formerly were deemed passé. And you see that again in cultural studies. You see that in the return of value in Storm's work. You see that certainly in the thrust of developmental metamodernism. And so I would say that the return of the sacred, so to speak, is an aspect of metamodernism broadly. And in fact, my first book on the topic was called Metamodernism and the Return of Transcendence, partly for this reason. And I think that as people found themselves increasingly in a postmodern world devoid of any kind of transcendent calling, that created a sort of vacuum and a hole and a void in cultural life and in individual psychic life that we're now seeing a profound reaction to. And unfortunately, a lot of the cases we're seeing in contemporary society aren't necessarily particularly healthy reactions either. They're reactionary approaches to a long stifled urge to move into the field of value and the sacred, but are now doing so in a perhaps rather sloppy way. I think one of the potential values of metamodernism is to try to speak to that urge and that desire from a very complex vantage that can allow people to situate it within a broader historical context and to give it some of the intellectual and theoretical tools to be able to most healthfully and salutarily approach the sacred in with the kind of complexity that we need today. Yeah.
Yeah, and If I have it right, you are not defining the sacred.
I think we can work with a minimal description of the sacred as the enshrinements of hi historically successful meanings and values that help cohere the collective and move it in a negentropic direction. And that might sound really technical. And if people are interested in this aspect of my work, they can check out my series, The Evolution of Meaning. But I do think that we can understand a word like the sacred in all of its diversity as generally pointing to that meaningful information that societies recognize as meaningful and as value, as the basis of value and normative orientation because of prior successes by organizing according to that information. And so I think in society there's always that tendency to try to enshrine and to codify and to sort of cordon off those aspects of knowledge that are deemed particularly foundational to the ongoing viability of the collective organism. And that cordoning off, that separation, is the sacralization of the world that we talk about in sociology. It's what sort of defines the sacred and the profane. And I think if it's conceived broadly enough in those terms, then you can see how there is a way of talking about and seeing the sacred in human evolution, despite its profound diversities in different cultural moments, that is still functionally performing that end. And so, with that in mind, I would also, to your previous question, add in a slight qualifier, which is that even though this metamodern moment might be seeing a quote unquote return of the sacred, I would argue that there's always some notion of a sacred, even if it's only latent or implicit. Even in postmodern deconstruction and cynicism and irony, there's an implicit and tacit sense of the sacred. There's a quote, and I forget who said it, but it goes something to the effect of, behind every cynical ironist is a
The failed
disillusioned idealist or something.
idealist, yeah.
And I think that that's very true. And even looking at the darkest aspects of cynical postmodern culture, what you really see is an implicit critique that is ultimately in favor of very classic and enduring human values. When you see the irony of Jeff Koons or the dark cynicism of Fight Club, you see arguably an implicit recognition that this send-up, this mockery, this satire is the negative image of something of genuine value. I think what metamodernism tries to do is recognize that and then just invert it to negate that negation and say, well, what is the value that we're getting at here? Let's be honest about it. Let's be open. Let's be forthright about it. In that way, a lot of the valuations that we're doing aren't being done covertly. They're being very explicitly approached, and that allows us a more effective means of actually trying to make the world better by orienting us towards those values. But I would just say then, in all of that, there's always some notion of a sacred that people are working with. And I think to the degree that people have latched on to and found some value in the insights of Jordan Peterson, for example, it's probably because that's one aspect I think he does get very right, is this notion of a hierarchy of values that's always in the background, whether we own it or not. Arguably, when we don't own it, pathologies enter and shadow enters, etc. And again, Ken Wilber's work is great about pointing all that out. But once we're able to see what the sacred is doing and how it's functioning and how we can broadly conceive of it, such that we can also recognize its different moments and transformations across human cultural evolution, I think we can then also get a better sense of what our next move is. And that's what I think this metamodern call to re-envision the sacred is largely about, and why it's so kind of urgently needed.
Great, great. I think that for this session, I think
Yeah. You sound like my therapist or something. For this session, we covered a lot here. So yeah, no, this is good. I think we covered a lot of ground there.
and I think we get a good sense of the kind of it's cool. It's a kind of ongoing life practice as but it, the thing that's interesting to me is also is that it requires a kind of hunger. You know, to live engaged, reading voraciously, being with others and knocking these ideas around, really, yeah, coming together and trying to do something collectively that hasn't been done. That there's a kind of rawness or willingness to put oneself beyond oneself.
Well, I think one needs an insatiable hunger for an infinite task, which is how I conceive of it. And it is also one of the meaningful differentiations of a kind of metamodern approach to this, to say modern or traditional approaches, which were much more about absolute meaning, absolute truth. I think when you can situate this story evolutionarily and recognize that this is an unfolding event that is always leading into the future and never, in a sense, fully consummated, at least in one's own lifetime, then there is a recognition of all of that as being so much bigger than oneself. And yet, everything that we can do to help forward that and advance that is profoundly meaningful. Which is why I use the metaphor of building the cathedral. It's a vast undertaking and collective enterprise that will take many, many generations. And all we can do with our lives is just our small part is to add some, brick here and there to the edifice. And I see that that really is the profound meaning, if we want to think about it that way, of our shared story as a species is building the temple that outlives us, that we are a part of. I see conceiving of human life as a project of temple construction as a very profoundly meaningful one. And if we're in a meaning crisis, then I feel like that's a pretty good antidote and answer to that problem. So, yeah.